Now let's examine how the perception or the misperception of inadequate coping resources leads to anxiety. The key factor in maintaining stability in a presumably risky activity seems to be whether the client has confidence that he or she can proceed without incurring an unacceptable risk. The person who seriously questions his ability to perform adequately or safely begins to experience inhibitions and anxiety. The danger signals are triggered and pressures build up to discourage further movement into what one client termed the danger zone. Anxiety, in this instance, is an unpleasant signal to stop forward progress. If your client stops or retreats, as you know, his or her anxiety decreases. If he advances, it increases. If he makes a conscious decision to proceed, he may be able to override the inhibiting anxiety. The role of an inhibiting system may be viewed as a safety or precautionary system, which is brought into play when there is a clear and present physical or interpersonal danger. The role of the inhibition is to curb or to slow down action that can, as the client may interpret it, jeopardize his or her safety. As long as your client is confident of being able to negotiate the task, the mechanism remains inoperative, so to speak. However, as soon as his or her confidence wanes, the inhibiting mechanism is activated. Now, this is where the real tug of war begins. There is a tug of war between advance, stop, go slow, and pull back. If your client proceeds skillfully and maintains his or her balance, so to speak, he or she may remain cool and not have an anxiety attack. However, as soon as your client sees an unexpected trouble spot and is not certain whether or how he can handle it, he or she is likely to experience physical as well as psychological signs which restrain them. This brings us to the functioning of dysfunctional behavior. The triggering of a self-protective mechanism is determined by your client's estimation of the amount of danger that will result if he or she performs inadequately. For example, the child Bobby who tries to make good grades to prevent his parents' pending separation. There is an interesting relationship between estimated magnitude of the danger and the expectation of poor performance. That is, the more drastic the consequence of the poor performance, the more poorly an individual expects to perform. Thus, the more the parents argue, the lower the child's school performance. The child's reaction to the threat may be best understood in terms of a global perspective of self-confidence, and we've talked about this earlier. This construct refers to a whole constellation of attitudes involving Bobby's positive estimation of his capabilities and his belief in his ability to exercise them. Low self-confidence implies that Bobby has a low rating of his capabilities and a negative expectation of his success. The issue of self-confidence raises several questions here. Number one, what factors lower or raise your client's self-confidence? Number two, how does lowered self-confidence translate to impeding performance? What psychological and physical mechanisms lead to this poor performance? And number three, what function is served by low self-confidence? And I think this is a real key here. Let me repeat that. What function is served by your client's low self-confidence and the resulting deterioration of performance? And this is a factor that can easily be overlooked in a session because clients have a natural tendency to avoid looking at this. Of the factors affecting self-confidence in the presence of a threat, I have already suggested that the severity and probability of possible failure have a negative correlation with self-confidence. The prospect of a divorce for Bobby's parents will reduce confidence more than will the prospect of the parents staying together and still arguing. On the other hand, the presence of a support system that the child can grasp as his anxiety increases may increase his self-confidence. The safety feature provides a backup system should the child go into a freeze mode, so to speak. But how does evaluation anxiety fit into this picture? A client entering a socially threatening situation is like someone walking on a tightrope, and you may agree, and I find when I deal with clients in this situation, it helps me to have this tightrope visualization. He feels vulnerable to a series of mishaps if he performs inadequately. For safety's sake, the client must perform to a rigid set of rules regarding appropriate actions and movements. In the case, for example, of Bobby's grades, the greater Bobby's confidence in his skill, the less likely he will make a potentially fatal mistake, perform poorly on a test, and receive a low grade. If his anxiety takes over, his performance may be sabotaged, as you know, by freezing. Thus, this situation is a test of Bobby's ability and maturity. Smooth performance reaffirms his image of himself and maintains his favored status in his mind and his parents' eyes. However, failure would shatter this image and Bobby's point of view, cause further arguments, and end in a possible divorce. Let's look into more detail into the common features of this evaluation threat. There are certain commonalities among the various situations in which an individual may experience evaluation anxiety. According to Greenberg, these evaluation threat situations can be grouped as follows. Number one, social situations initiating or maintaining a person-to-person relationship, participating in a social gathering, for example, a party. Number two, a school or vocational situation where performance is evaluated by a teacher, as in the case of Bobby, a supervisor, a peer group, taking a test or exam, conferring with the supervisor, and so on. And number three, transactions in the outside world, for example, while shopping or traveling. Now, a complex web of factors in these situations may exaggerate or create fears and anxieties, as you know. These factors involve the question of evaluation and vulnerability, and they include the following. And as I'm going through these, you might think of a client you have that is experiencing anxiety due to an evaluation threat and use these 7 points as a checklist. Number one, the relative status of the individual and the evaluator in the area of power and social desirability. Now, for school children, a lot of times there's a peer group. In an adult situation, at work, it may be a supervisor. And in a marital situation, it may be who brings home the bacon. Number two, the individual's skill in presenting an attractive or effective front. Number three, his confidence in his ability to perform adequately in a given threat situation. Number four, his appraisal of the degree of the threat. Number five, the threshold of certain automatic verbalizations that would inhibit him or block him. Number six, the rigidity of his rules that he presents. Number seven, the anticipated evaluation and the outcome. The individual who is anxious on entering into an evaluation situation has a network of questions. For example, let's look at your reaction and your anxiety concerning completing this home study course and the answer booklet, as this may present an evaluation threat for some of you taking the home study course. You might ask yourself this: to what degree is this a test of my competence or acceptability? How much do I have to prove myself? Number two, what is my status relative to that of my evaluator? Number three, how important is it to establish a position of strength about relative power or status? Number four, what is the attitude of the evaluator? Number five, to what degree can I count on my skills? And number six, what is the likelihood of my being undermined or distracted? Ready for question 16? The question of self-confidence raises what question?